Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent, where we have gathered to celebrate the life of one we have loved and lost. We tried to create an intimate setting today by forming a circle. Obviously didn't expect as many friends and loved ones to show up. So indeed, we have created an intimate space, haven't we? As we enter into a time of sacred fellowship, it's the faith tradition of this church to offer words of wisdom and to light a chalice, bringing forth a flame symbolizing the illumination of awareness and the glow of warmth.
Spirit of life, come unto me, sing in my heart all the stirrings of compassion, blow below me,
with words of wisdom. This is actually something that was found on a tombstone in Ireland, very simple and yet profound. Death leaves a heartache no one can heal. Love leaves a memory no one can steal. With gratitude, we come to celebrate the life of a good woman, Beverly Ham Cole. Bev was a vibrant individual, someone who joyfully immersed herself into the fullness of life before quietly slipping away into the mystery. With grief, we come to mourn her death. Bev's final years were a slow journey. She wasn't unable to live the vibrant life that she had known. But Bev was embraced by the gift of love. Love and tender care from her devoted husband and from caring family and friends. And now it is our time to come together to share our love and support for Bev's family. Her husband, Larry, their daughters, Alyssa and Aaron, and the respective spouses, Paul and Amanda. granddaughter, Sierra Cole, and her daughter, Marley. Grandson, Kieran Cole, and his daughter, Nyla. Granddaughter, Ayana. Granddaughter, Erica, and her children, Elliot, Dylan, and Zona. Grandson, Austin, and Bev's brother, Thomas. By our presence here today, we are acknowledging our need to express our grief together in a community of loving family and friends. For some, grief began 2 years ago when Bev's declining health confined her to her home. Others here are just now experiencing what to them is a sudden loss. Let us recognize the different emotions felt within this circle. I lift up those who shed tears, cry without shame. Let us also honor those who expressed their grief in the past and are beginning to heal from the loss. Despite the differences in the rawness of our grief, we are bound in common recognition that, like all lives, Bev's life was sacred, and so is its ending. The void left by Bev's physical absence can never be filled. But you will always carry her with you. She loved you, and you loved her. Whomever you have loved becomes infused within your life and becomes an immortal presence. Always remember that despite the pain of loss, at the core of our being, we possess an ever-growing capacity to hold love. There is no better way to bring alive the depths of Bev's life than to hear from those whose lives were impacted and enriched by knowing her. Her daughter, Alyssa, would like to share a reflection.
There's a running joke amongst my children that any time I feel wronged or slighted or see a story that upsets me, oh God, Mom's gonna write a letter. And that's usually the case. That's the cloth from which I'm cut. I grew up seeing the world through my mother's eyes, through the lens of equality, decency, and justice. This is evident in the career path I've chosen, and it represents the core of who I am. I've raised my children grounded in the philosophy that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Standing up for what's right is always worth the risk and the blowback involved. Speaking out for those with no voice is always righteous. Defending the least among us defines our own character. My mom taught us to be accountable and to hold others accountable. Being raised by a strong, assertive, and empowered woman may be the most important gift my mom ever gave me. And now, God willing, my grandchildren will carry that forward. My mom was always open and honest, sometimes infuriatingly so. She pulled no punches, but there was nothing I couldn't talk to her about. And there will never be a day that I won't miss that terribly. I will miss her smile and her laugh. She was so much fun, and she was really funny. But she is all around me. She's in every weighty decision that I make. I hear her in every oldie but goodie Eagles song that plays. She lives in every lake I visit and every backyard bird I see. She's the calming smell of tea tree. And she lives on in my children and my grandchildren. I'm thankful for every second of the countless hours we spent together, the trips we took, the summer spent in the island in Canada. the card games we played on rainy days. And I'm incredibly grateful for the diversity that she surrounded us with. I would like to take a moment to acknowledge and thank my father, who never left her side, whose care and compassion through it all was astounding. Thanks, Dad. And thank you guys all for coming to celebrate her life. It means the world to our family. And I will close with one of her favorite lines from one of her favorite Eagles songs, Already Gone. So oftentimes it happens that we live our lives in chains and we never even know we have the key. Thank you.
Would any other family members care to share?
Yeah, I actually want to thank everybody for coming out. Good to see, you know, how many people she knew. I know a lot of people couldn't come that would like to be here. I just don't think that we could choose one great thing that she put in our memories and, you know, say that in one thing. So that's why we can't really come up here and say, you know, this is one thing that I'd like to say. It's just so many things that we all, you know, think of her at one time. You know, there's too many great memories. So it's not that we don't want to come up here and talk, you know. It's just too many. There's too many memories, you know. So I would like to say them all at once, but it'd take me. We'd be up here for weeks if I said every thing that I wanted to say. So.
So my mom gave me the prompt to. I will remember Graham when, and like my cousin Kieran said, I'd be up here all day. I went back and forth. I really couldn't pinpoint one moment. Be it the sound of birds chirping, the smell of coffee brewing, someone's laugh, my son eating butter right out of the container like she always did. But I will think of her in all of these things, really. But I don't think there's ever a day that'll go by that I don't think of her, because so much of her is in me. I see her in my facial expressions. I say her words quite frequently. There's never a day that she won't be on my mind. So, go ahead. You can say no. Okay, come on. She's my.
It's not possible to mention every aspect of Bev's full life. As wife, sister, mother, grandparent, teacher, gardener, and volunteer. But through multiple voices, we can highlight different aspects. The family has asked that today be an opportunity to celebrate Bev's life, and they would like to invite anyone who would like to share a remembrance of Bev to take this opportunity to share it with everyone here. So I invite you to share aloud, and so that everyone can hear, and I know it's difficult to get out, I will come around with the microphone, so please raise your hand if you would like to share something.
Bev would always give me a hug after I sang, and I was always so touched.
I came here 17 years ago, and one of the first connections Bev and I made, besides our gray hair, was that she spent her working career with special needs teenagers, And at the when I came here, my twin sons, who are on the autism spectrum, were just 13 years old. And we would talk. And I would be going through certain stages with them. And she would explain to me what worked with her students, mostly young men. And she would say, "Now, honey, this is what you need to do." The other thing I have very, very fond memories about were conversations we would have about some of the incredibly beautiful pieces of jewelry she would wear. So any of you who have those know that, yes, her turquoise was just exquisite. We shared a lot of hugs, too. She was a great hugger, wasn't she? So thanks, Beth.
Bev was a great friend with a generous heart. We knew each other a long time, and we shared a lot. I, too, was a teacher, so we spent many an hour talking about schools and students and solving all the problems. We knew the answers. We also shared gardening. 26 years ago, when we built our house, and I had a blank canvas, Bev's like, "Come on over. I'll give you a few plants." Well, you know, hours later, my loaded car left her garden, and we still enjoy those. It's a friendship garden. In the spring, she would always get Larry and invite me to jump in the van, and we'd go up to Holden Arboretum for the big sale, all the native plants. But the day wasn't over. Then we'd start slowly driving back, stopping at every antique store and every nursery until the van was loaded and we'd make it back to Kent. We had some grand times. And we also loved music, folk music. And so the four of us, Joel and Bev and Larry, would go to concert after concert. And I'm always will be thankful for the celebration of my 60th birthday party in Cleveland. Larry took us to a great place for dinner, and then we went to hear Beau Soleil downtown, which was wonderful, wonderful. We even, for a while, kind of stalked a local folk musician, John Mosey. We would always go to hear him in Kent and around, but then we even went down to Berlin in Amish country one night, and this little coffee shop, there were six people in the audience, four from Kent. John was kind of surprised. It was fun. We had great times. Bev and I also worked very hard at this church. About 20 years ago, when we talked about, yeah, Kent should have a farmer's market, and we heard this one was being constructed, and we thought the church has to be there. We want to live in a town with a farmer's market. So we thought, what could we sell? We thought, well, we could bake. So every night, I'd bake about 21 loaves of pumpkin bread. Bev would bake all kinds of things, and we'd set up the table and get our the market umbrella, and we'd be there every Saturday morning for about 3 years. And it was a good time. That was a good tradition, so I miss her.
I remember so much how much Bev loved beauty and color. And she noticed when we would go on walks, and Ted would come too, and she would, and I'd be talking or looking at the concrete or something, and Bev would say, look at that green there, do you see, you know, isn't that beautiful? The things that I would never, you know, wouldn't notice, wouldn't think about. And then her, of course, she loved turquoise as everyone. She just really loved it. And we had the privilege of going once up to the island. And there she took me out in the canoe on the lake. And she said, look at the color of the water. Isn't that beautiful, you know. And all these special things, all these wonderful colors. And then when she'd come back from the antique store, she would show me these things, you know, the history of, you know, these little things that just intrigued her, which is really great. And then we did go to the Alleghenies a few times. Well, stayed there and went skiing, and that was just a wonderful experience. You know, we shared a cabin, and no better people to do that with, Larry and Bev. So I think, you know, it came out in her house, too, that love of beauty and color. You know, it's there. Yes. Thank you.
Well, there's so much to say that I'm just going to have to be brief. I'm not going to tell you about what Bev's been doing in her adulthood. I can tell you how she was when she was young. She was once, you know. So was Larry. So was I. And, well, I married a woman named Beverly, and so did Larry. There was never any confusion because I used to call my wife Schnoo, and if I remember, Larry, you called Bev Mel? Yeah. So there was no confusion. We practiced being parents with little pets, and I remember that Bev had a little skunk. It didn't do well. In fact, early on, parenting wasn't a great success, but practicing on animals, we all got better at it. So I practiced with little dogs, and eventually I had, with my wife, two daughters, and of course Larry and Bev also had two daughters. The two Bevs were good friends. We went all manner of places together, and Cook's Forest became a metaphor of let's just get in a car and go somewhere. And I think we did at one point get to Cook's Forest, but it was closed. We drove there, drove all night coming back. I don't know, we did some silly things, and that's what being young is for, I think. I mean, it was great. Then eventually we got, very staid and mature. Bev became the Beverly you know. And Larry, look at him, my goodness. Elder statesman. He was nuts when he was young. Thinking back about Beverly and also thinking as things are now about Larry, he set a precedent which helps me out insofar as, I don't know what your political views are, I'm in a Unitarian church here, so I can guess, but I wrote my daughter that present state of affairs makes a mockery of everything I ever tried to do as an educator. And she, you know. And then I thought about Larry, and Larry set a precedent that of love and devotion that is, if I were a Roman Catholic, I'm not. There's all these saints. You know, if I were going to canonize, I'm going to embarrass the hell out of you, Larry. I'd canonize you. I really would, because what... What I've seen, just amazing. And all right, on that note, I'm going to yield.
My wife Sue and I live two doors down from Bev and Larry, and we're very much new to their life. We just moved here 7 years ago from out of state. But they both really welcomed us and even invited us places to Blossom, to Rembrandt in America with their first person's Canadian friend truck driver. It was just awesome. But I also got a sense of knowing Bev over the years that she respected a good rule. So when she was out walking Pepper, I always made sure not to even get close to the 20-mile-an-hour speed limit in our neighborhood, because she had a look that made you want to tap the brakes.
I have a lot of memories of Bev, too. I knew her for many years. I considered her not just a friend, but a mentor and almost a mother figure to me. But two memories really stand out as being kind of quintessential Bev. The first was a couple years after we joined the church, and I had finally dragged my husband to a church potluck. And he's standing there, and all of a sudden he stops and he looks and he says, "Mrs. Cole, Mrs. Cole, do you remember me?" And he went running up to her, and you know, she did. She did. He was in his 40s, and she remembered, she could tell me stories about him from his school days. When I went back to school myself to get my teaching certificate, she encouraged me, and I have always hoped that my students will remember me as fondly as he remembered her. And the other memory was at a church camp one summer. My son did not want to go to his morning education classes. He was maybe 3 or 4. And so when I tried to take him, he would cling to my leg and scream bloody murder. And after a few mornings of this, Bev came out behind me one morning and she looked at Davey there clinging and screaming and she said, "You know, I've had about enough of this." And she picked him up under one arm. And she marched off to the children's classes with him. And that was the last time he screamed or cried.
First of all, I'm from Ontario, Canada. And I grew up in the area where Bev's family had a camp. And I'm come from a family of 12 children. And I'm one of the older children. And Beverly and Larry and the family and his father-in-law, Judge Ham, and Thomas and his wife, Patricia, all got to know our family because we were by the lake, by the dock, where they got their boat and went to the camp. So we've stayed in touch over all these years. And I really believe and I feel that that's one thing that we should all do is we should always stay in touch, whether it's a happy event, a sad event, or just any event. Just pick up the phone and say hello. So when the family kept me apprised of Bev's health, and I had come down here for a ride and was doing a road trip, and I stopped in and let Bev, well, I think I let Larry know that I was going to come by, and Bev was all excited. She, like, I think... She kept, I kept phoning, and I'll be there at this time, or, you know, as I'm traveling, coming in from Cleveland. She just paced the driveway back and forth, like she just, somebody come in to visit from far away. So what I did is stayed in touch with Erin through the social media about her mom. And Bev became a very close family friend, a very close friend, actually, of my mother. And Bev always said, "I learned so much from your mother." I think we all learn a lot from our mothers, don't we? Every one of us in this room, we can remember our mother and what they've done for us and what they gave to us and where we are at in life and as we continue our journey. So in 2015, I wrote a poem and I gave it to Bev. And this is the writing here. I believe I gave the copy or the one to Larry and Bev. I of course, I always keep all my writings. And so I'm going to read that to you. In essence, it's me looking at Beverly, and this is how I saw her. And this is how I saw her fit into my world and into the world of my sisters and brothers and her family and her children, her husband, of course, and her brother and so forth, and the children she taught at school. A friend I have held so dear, okay, let's put that up here. A friend I have held so dear, over time, we stayed in touch and would recall hot summer days and cool evenings that children enjoyed morning to night. Enjoying time spent together and visits from summer to the beginning of fall, staying so long because children had to once again do what is right. Teachers were all ready to return to the schoolroom if not no other, but then again, we all had to do what was told by our father and mother. For only a few months could we all swim, laugh, relax, and also play, then returning to a morning that told us it was time to schedule our day. Life back then was so safe and simple,
peaceful and, of course, so very carefree. Beverly, with her kind and sunny disposition, would slowly begin to pack. The camp up and the children would help to close everything for it to be. There once again, when returning to at the end of school, they would be back. Beverly raising her daughters with so much love and guidance, true, to see them grow into women, she who expressed pride in what they do. Grandchildren soon came along, and smiles would never cease to be, for she saw in them her family and a bright future for all to see. A loving mother, a loving wife, and grandmother who has such class, embracing life with open eyes, your husband and daughters came first and all in part to hold the memories that you have for all the years that have come to pass. A love that will never end because you have had such a huge and loving heart. And then on this frame, I started off with, and I go clockwise because we follow things in our culture clockwise. And it says daughter, sister, wife, mother, auntie, grandmother, great-grandmother, friend, of course, always, and a teacher. And this early picture of my mother and her and Beverly's from 1975. That's the earliest picture we could find. And these other pictures that are on here is when I came down to visit with Larry and Bevan. They were very kind guests and very open. We went to a museum, and we saw some wonderful paintings in Cleveland. Went to the gardens, like Bev was just so proud of, and just wanted to stay there all day. I think Larry and I were like looking at each other, come on, we got to get her out of here. It's time to go. And that's Beverly, because she loved that. So I'm going to present this to the family. This is theirs to keep and cherish. Thank you.
First, to the family, all my sympathy and condolences to all the family members I have not met, and to all of you here. I'm so grateful and thankful that the Cole family came across my life. I did not know, and I did not find out until later, that she was ill. So when I heard that it happened, caused me to reflect. You always want to be able to say something nice, something great at a time like this. And if the truth be told, a lot of people lie. That's true. That's true. But I'm so grateful and so thankful that of the Cole family and of Bev Cole and Larry, I can say during a time like this that I remember back when we had so much tension in our society on today, that I was so grateful that they were considered part of the village that helped raise me up. That mentality, and I thought of what I could say, and I thought about the fact when they lived on Fairchild, that was a far way away. We came up on South Bend, but when even after they moved to Twin Lakes, and even after I was grown, the times that I had run out and talked to them and met them, when I was in their house, I didn't feel like a little black kid. I called for a kid. I just felt like a little kid. Mm-hmm. There was never a time, and you can't say that about everybody. Mm-hmm. Whenever I was at their house, it was at dinner time, I ate dinner at their house. Whenever they had parties and get-togethers and kids were all over there, we were all treated with love and respect. And I always remember that, especially about Miss Cole, because she did cut it straight. Mm-hmm. She didn't play around. She said it like it was. And if you were upset, you were just going to have to get over it. And we're missing a lot of that nowadays. So I'm so grateful and so thankful to the Lord for the family and her daughters and for Larry. He always would correct me. I remember when I got older and I would say, Mr. Cole, and he would say, Larry. But I appreciate that. I appreciate that respect. I appreciated that love, so I'm grateful and thankful that there would be, I'm sure, many people that wanted to be here that couldn't make it to enjoy and participate in this celebration of life. The family, you know I love you, my prayers are continuing with you. If there's anything I can do, just let me know. Thank you.
We started coming here about 25 years ago. And I really didn't want to join a church or have any part of a church. And one of the first events we were roped into, I suspect, was a mystery dinner. And there was only about 50 members of this church, and it was a completely different kind of environment because we didn't have a minister. It was basically a round robin of we take turns talking to each other and our different beliefs. But that mystery dinner, Bev played the villain. And the role she played was a cafeteria cook. And she had a hollowed-up book with 500 ways to make Jell-O. And, you know, and it was, I thought you people were nuts. And you know what? I really felt like I fit right in. And Larry and Bev had been, we don't make friends very easily. And Bev and Larry were some of our best friends, and we're really going to miss Bev a lot. And we have a piece of gorgeous jewelry here. But thanks you all for coming.
My name is Sandra. I was Ms. Cole's caretaker. I grew a new family being with them. A new dog. Now I end up with three in the end. That was kind of fun because I'm not an animal lover, so it made me one. Now, I was there every day. I don't even know what to do with my days. But I know when I walked in their house and met them, Mr. Cole made me know when a man loves a woman. And I named her My Fair Lady because she had all the class that goes with that. I really, really missed her. Today is hard for me because my boyfriend died of cancer 3 years ago, and today is his birthday. So I tormented all night. But I couldn't miss this. And Mr. Cole took me out yesterday for coffee, something we always did. I had a cup with my name on it. He's like, "That's your cup." I was like, "No, that's your cup." He said, "Don't you see your name?" I said, "No, that's your cup." He said, "There's Sandra in that cup." So when I went home and showed my great-grandson the cup, he said, "Grandma, that's your light?" I said, "No, that's a cup." He said, "That's a light." I said, I opened up, I said, "See your cup you got? This is my cup." "Oh, your cup. Yeah, yeah, yeah." I said, "Okay. But I want y'all to know, I'm always going to be a part of this Cole family. I can't go away from y'all. It means too much. Y'all mean too much. I never seen so much love in one household. Where the niece look after the aunt, the aunt look after the niece, cousin look after this one. And the kids are phenomenal grandkids. So I'm thankful God put me in their path to be able to take care of her. And all the love that we all share, and we still share. I just had to say that.
Lee, you say that Larry was nuts when he was young. What do you mean, was? Larry is a quintessential big brother. One of the many great things that he did for me was to bring home a great big sister.
Just wanted to share a couple brief memories. So one of my oldest memories that really stand out about Bev is a time when on a church canoeing trip, there were two couples that really were having a rough time in the canoe. And Bev and Larry were one of those couples, and I won't mention who the other couple was. Another... Yeah, she's still here. And we stayed together. Another really fun memory, we had, I believe John Cluth had hosted a pottery, Send Your Pottery to Heaven workshop, where we had made pottery and then tried to fire it in a gigantic bonfire, and you can imagine how well that went. But one of the things that came out of that was a kiln that I was able to refurbish. And then we got together with Bev, and we had a pottery class here at the church where we sat at the little tiny kids' tables, and just really, her joy at working with the clay was just lovely to see. So that was a real fun memory. I always regretted that I never did that class again. I know she wanted to. And the last thing was we were invited up to the island and stayed with Bev and Larry for a week, part of a week. And how much fun she had swimming in the lake, that beautiful cold water. But my favorite thing was we were there right as the cabin had been opened. And we were getting ready to cook. And there was a problem with the electricity. It eventually got fixed. But we were going to bake something in the oven. And just on a whim, I thought, well, we should look in the oven. And the look on Bev's face when I opened that oven door and we saw that the mice had taken all the stuffing out of one of the couches and packed it in the oven. But her expression was just precious.
I also had the privilege and honor to go to the island with Bev once for 3 weeks. And when you're at the island, one of the things you can do is you can visit your neighbors by swimming. So we swam over to the next island where they were friends with these folks, and they had grown some tomatoes on their island. So when it was time to go home, they wanted to give us these tomatoes. And it's like, is there anything as great as a homegrown tomato? Right? So we put the tomatoes in our bras. And then, because you need both hands to swim back to the other island. So we swam back to the dock, but at the bottom of the dock, so excited, like beyond himself with excitement, is Beth's little dog, who's so happy that we're back. And so like we reach up and we put the tomatoes, and before we can ascend the really difficult ladder, the dog is sniffing the tomatoes and noses them all into the lake. So now the tomatoes are at the bottom of Lake Huron. So Bev said, I know where there's a mask. And she went to the shed, and she came back with this mask. And we took turns trying to dive, because you couldn't reach them even with your feet. So we have to dive down like head first and try to grab these tomatoes. I'm like holding my nose with one hand. And we finally got all these tomatoes back. And like we didn't put them on the dock that time. So I feel like every time I slice a tomato, I'm back in Lake Huron, you know. Love Bevy so much.
Well, when I saw in the program the mention about the Kent Environmental Council early days and recycling, I just had to say that there aren't too many of us left from those very early days, but recycling became a big issue with Ruth Mead, who started, in fact, in Kent, the first recycling program in the state of Ohio, which became the what the state used as their way of setting it up. So whenever you go ahead and recycle, remember the Kent Environmental Council. And when it caught fire in town, and then they set up a tent down by the police station down in Kent, and it was some big 55-gallon drum cans, and would put things in, and we would use mallets and crush the plastic and the glass. Oh, they are. Some people here remember, not many of us, but a few. And Bev was and Larry were part of that early day, and it was something to remember. And but always remember to recycle.
So Aaron and I have been friends. I say basically since the womb. Like we came out searching for each other. Didn't meet until we were like three and stayed friends. And the two things that I wanted to say was her encouragement of us being friends. There was once we decided we were not going to separate ever. I don't know how old we were, 8, 10, something like that. And so we went down, it was when you were still on Fairchild, and we packed this cardboard box full of fruit and cheese, and we were just going to stay up there forever. And Bev let us do it. Like, like, you know, like cardboard was going to keep fruit and cheese. And we just stayed up there having fun until, you know, somebody had to go to the bathroom or whatever. And then another one is how she really, I think for me, taught me how, one of the ways, how to have difficult conversations. I remember I was in junior high, and it was about the time that you at least for me, that I realized that I was a black girl and I was being treated differently than other people. And I was on the basketball team, and there was a point where I was continuously getting fouls called on me, and I was like, I am doing everything that other people are doing. And there was a point where Aaron charged into me, and I was like, you too? You're in on it too? And she was driving us home. She was driving me home that night, and I was like, I'm not talking to her ever again. I'm not going to do it. And by this time, you know, we've been friends like 11 years. So we've been friends over a decade. And I was like, I'm never doing it. And she would not let me get out of the car. Bev was like, you all have been friends too damn long for you to have this shit going on. And so I just started like pouring out everything that was going on. We had this really wonderful discussion. And it was like, you can have these difficult things that are happening in your life and say, like, are you doing this too? And you're like, I don't know what you're talking about. But it's taught me how to really be in relationship with people and how to be vulnerable and honest about where I am.
Bev really loved life, and she loved to travel. And I wanted to experience all of that with her. So I called her one time and I said, hey, Beth, my daughter goes to Savannah College of Art and Design and they're having an art festival this weekend. Or it was in 2 weeks. She's like, we're going. So I'm like, all right. And Bev was 25 years older than me. So we go, I take her the program, and we did everything. Everything. We went to the sidewalk, art chalk, everything. We went to the play. Like, and my daughter was down there in college. She was 20. By the end of the weekend, I'm like, Bev, I have to go home. I'm exhausted. We couldn't keep up with her. We had to do every single thing there was, everything. And we were staying with college students that had no air conditioning. We sat in our underwear all weekend. But we had to do every single thing there was. And Larry, I remember asking her about you and when she first met you. She said, Lori, as soon as I saw him, I knew that was going to be my husband.
Obviously, Bev was one of a kind and beloved by many. Thank you for sharing. I vividly recall that Bev had a passion for gardening and flowers, as has been mentioned. So in this spirit, I offer a poem by Walter Rinder. It's called Finding You in Beauty. The rays of light filtered through the sentinels of trees this morning. I sat in the garden and contemplated. The serenity and beauty of my feelings and surroundings completely captivated me. I thought of you. I discovered you tucked away in the shadows of the trees, then rediscovered you in the smiles of the flowers as the sun penetrated their petals. In the rhythm of the leaves falling in the garden, in the freedom of the birds as they fly searching. I'm very happy to have loved you. You will never leave me, for I will always find you in the beauty of life. Our Unitarian Universalist Church Sacred Song Circle singers will now sing a song that was chosen by the Cole family.
We are a community of singers. We aren't necessarily professional or anything. We're just people who create community with song. The songs that we're going to be singing, these last two that we're going to be doing today, are pretty simple to do. And if anybody feels motivated to join in when you feel like you know what you are kind of aiming for, you can hum or ooh or sing harmony or melody. We would love to have you, because we all want to sing together in community for Bev.
Come sing a song with me. Come sing a song with me. Come sing a song with me, that I might know your mind. And I'll bring you home when hope is hard to find. And I'll bring a song of love and a rose in the winter time.
For being here. Thank you for singing and volunteering. I should say that I'm Amanda Cole. I had the distinct pleasure of marrying into this family, an institution I didn't actually believe in until I met Larry and Bev, really, because it made sense to get some extra parents, some really good people. And Aaron was also well-adjusted and a lovely person. And then there's all these wonderful children and another sister. So one thing that we wanted to share is that I began my relationship with Bev in the throes of dementia and Alzheimer's, which is a really terrible and wicked disease. But you have a lot of antics. So all the stories that you shared, I got to experience them in the dementia version, which would be the walking out of the restaurant to go buy chocolate, to go buy some damn chocolate. And we go and we bought some damn chocolate. Of having pepper thrown at me when I first met her, and it was this dog. Of getting really great parenting advice about my son. Probably 10 times the exact same parenting advice, but I probably just needed to hear it 10 more times. So I think the thing that I've learned the most through dementia and Alzheimer's, and something that Larry reminded us, is to not wait. So we all just need to remember to not wait and to do the things that we, when we can. And that's what Bev would want us to do. And the other thing that Bev would want us to do, and the way that memory does work, is as long as the memory lives within us, then that person continues to live. And so as we were getting ready for this, I'm kind of speaking for Aaron, because I'm better at it. And so, but we talked about how we wanted this to be very celebratory, because we're a celebratory bunch of people, and that's who Bev is. And we asked people to dress colorfully and colorful attire and attitudes and courage. And so I just wanted to share a poem that really came to mind for us as we were preparing. It's by Jenny Johnson, who also passed in January. When I am an old woman, I shall wear purple, with a red hat that doesn't go and doesn't suit me. And I shall spend my pension on brandy, summer gloves, and satin sandals. And say, we've no money for butter. Probably because Bev ate it all right out of the tub, apparently. I shall sit down on the pavement when I am tired and gobble up samples in shops and press alarm bells, which happened with dementia and just Bev, I think. And run my stick along the public railings and make up for the sobriety of my youth. I shall go out in my slippers in the rain, and I will pick the flowers in other people's gardens and learn to spit. You can wear terrible shirts. Oh, I lost my place. Oh. You can wear terrible shirts and grow more fat and eat 3 pounds of sausages at a go, or only bread and pickle for a week, and hoard the pens and the pencils and the beer mats and things in boxes. But now we must have clothes that keep us dry and pay our rent and not swear in the street and set a good example for the children. We will have friends to dinner and read the papers, but maybe I ought to practice a little now, so people who know me are not so shocked and surprised when suddenly I am old and start to wear purple.
It was with forethought that we are gathered today in a circle. We are immersed in circles, both literally and figuratively. We're ever circling as passengers on this blue marble planet that encircles the sun. We live our lives according to the circle of seasons, and we are all part of nature's eternal circle of life, death, and rebirth. And so we end this time of remembrance with a song about another never-ending circle, the circle of love that encompasses those for whom we care. Despite death, our loved ones live on within our unbroken circle of love. You probably won't recognize the lyrics of the verses of our closing song because they've been modified for Unitarian Universalist sensibilities. However, everyone is invited, as Sana said, to join in on the chorus.
Lift your voices with us, please. The words, by the way, are on the back of your program if you don't know them. For the will the circle be unbroken?
Will the circle be unbroken? Singing with my family.
I extinguish our chalice, but not the warmth of love that goes with us. I offer this departing blessing by Irish priest and poet John O'Donohue. On the days when the weight deadens on your shoulders, may the nourishment of the earth be yours. May the clarity of light be yours. May the radiance of nature's colors be yours. May a slow wind work these words of love around you, an invisible cloak to mind your life. May you go in peace and thanksgiving for the love which never dies. The Cole family invites you to enjoy refreshments and continue your remembrances downstairs.